join us shortly on a Juno Afternoon. We'll be talking with some Juno jumpers. We'll get a preview of this weekend's Maritime Festival. We'll learn about the local letter carrier's food drive to stamp out hunger. Lori Sika will be here to highlight litter-free Juno. We'll get our appetites ready for the Reach fundraising spaghetti dinner, and we'll talk with Victor Asuncion, one of the headline performers at this year's Jazz and Classics Festival. All that, the Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more today at 3 on KTOO.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A federal judge has ruled in favor of some Pine Ridge residents who allege unequal access to the polls in Jackson County, South Dakota. In 2014, early in-person voting opened at the county courthouse in the town of Kadoka. A similar office did not open in Wombly. That's about an hour drive to the Pine Ridge Reservation. Some community members cried foul. Voting rights groups say they want to ensure that in 2016, residents of Wombly have the same access to the ballot box as residents in the county seat of Kadoka. Charles Michael Ray has more.
Both towns of Kadoka and Wombly are in Jackson County. According to the 2010 census, the town of Wombly on the Pine Ridge Reservation is larger in population than the county seat of Kadoka. Early voting begins several weeks before Election Day at the county courthouse in Kadoka. But activists say that's not the case in Wombly. They claim there isn't equal access to the ballot box. U.S. District Judge Karen Schreier refused to dismiss the case.
You know, I like the way she says it, is basically that voting is the backbone of democracy. And, that's it in a nutshell.
O.J. Siemens is with the voting rights group Four Directions that supports the legal action against Jackson County.
I'm very confident that we will achieve our goal as far as equality is concerned, and we will have a satellite office in Wombly.
An attorney for Jackson County had no comment in response to the most recent ruling. Last fall, county officials stated they did not have the funding needed to open a satellite office, but they then opened one prior to Election Day after voting rights activists countered that Help America Vote Act funds are available to ensure equal access to the polls. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The flu season may be on the downward curve, but health officials say it's still active in parts of the country and say it's never too late for people to learn about the disease.
Influenza is a very serious disease. A lot of people think it's just a little bug, maybe a stomach bug, but it actually can be a really serious disease.
That's Amy Groom, Indian Health Service Immunization Program Manager. She says the disease includes respiratory symptoms like cold, cough, fever, and some people get very sick, with more than 200,000 hospitalized annually. American Indian and Alaska Native people are among those hardest hit. Groom says in 2009, during the H1N1 pandemic, Native people were four times more likely to die from complications related to the disease.
One of the reasons that American Indian Alaska Native people might be at higher risk for these kinds of complications is because there's a pretty heavy burden of chronic illness in the American Indian Alaska Native population. So things like diabetes and heart disease that can put you at higher risk for complications from influenza.
Groom says lack of access to treatment and prevention tools also contribute to high rates. The Indian Health Service and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are working to get information out to tribal communities, including new CDC initiatives using mobile technology.
We know that smartphones are increasingly becoming a source of information for people across the United States, and the American Indian Alaska Native population is no different. So CDC has developed some interactive mobile game that you can play on your smartphone about influenza, in addition to really continuing to use the web as a way to try to disseminate information. They've developed a flu knowledge quiz for American Indian Alaska Native communities, and there's a widget that can be posted on partner website.
Groom says vaccination remains the single best tool to help prevent influenza. On Capitol Hill, New Mexico's congressional delegation introduced the Esther Martinez Native American Languages Preservation Act Tuesday. The bill provides grants to Native American language education and preservation programs. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American Indians 50 and over. For yourself, your family, and our community, get screened. Info at AmericanIndianCancer.org.
The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at AHCNM.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to Juneau Afternoon. I'm your host, Lori Scandling. Let's take a quick look at the weather for the next couple of days. It will be partly cloudy in the high 50s. Rain, there will be a chance of it beginning tomorrow, but just a slight chance by Friday. That jumps to a pretty good chance of rain, with rain likely by Friday night. Over the weekend, we're looking at mostly cloudy still, and a chance of rain remains through Saturday and Sunday. I'd like to welcome our first guest today, Brian Holst of the Juneau Economic Development Council. He is here to talk about this weekend's Marine Fest, so maybe a few drops of rain will be appropriate.
It would be. Thank you, Lori. It will be sunny on Saturday because that's when we're celebrating the Maritime Festival.
Of course. Tell us a little bit about when and where, and I want to know about the genesis. Yeah. I've heard about the festival for quite some years, but I don't know how it got started.
This is the sixth annual Juneau Maritime Festival, and it started, I work with the Juneau Economic Development Council, and it really was an initiative of our board, sort of a recognition of the importance of all things maritime in our community, and perhaps a bit of a disconnect between how important the seafood industry is, the visitor products industry is, the presence of our researchers at NOAA, the Coast Guard presence, and a bit of a disconnect perhaps with our community, especially around seafood. You know, when we look at the seafood industry, just for example, we find that about 800 people earn their livings from the ocean directly tied to seafood, which would make that the single largest employer. So we're a big fishing town. So the Maritime Festival was created as a way to celebrate Juneau's maritime history, commerce, and culture, with an idea of having a good time, celebrating what so many people in our community are engaged in. But then, in addition to celebrating, we also hope to raise awareness amongst people about the importance. So you come to the event because it's a lot of fun, and then hopefully you leave the event with just a deeper appreciation of our connection to the water.
And will it be held on the docks downtown? I think that's where it has been held in the past. And tell us a little bit about the times and what to expect if people show up.
So the festival itself is on Saturday, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., and it's at the Marine Park Plaza and the Seadrome Dock. The Seadrome Dock is donated to us that day by Gold Belt, and that's where you get to go on vessel tours. You get to see sailboats and other working vessels, fishing vessels, that day that perhaps you don't get a chance to poke around on otherwise. The event is preceded. We started last year a fundraising dinner. So the event on Saturday is free to the public. Of course, there are vendors there that are going to have wares available to share, and there's food to buy, and there's a beer garden there, and there's lots of activities going on. But it costs money to put on an event like this. And so we've created a progressive dinner. So on Friday night, there is the Port to Starboard Progressive Dinner. And that is it's a fundraiser. So we get great support from our Taku smokeries and Alaska Glacier Seafoods in donating seafood. But nonetheless, it costs $85 a person to attend because it is a fundraiser. And it is it starts this year. We did it in different restaurants last year. This year it starts at TK McGuire's at the Prospector, and then moves over to Coho's at the Gold Belt Hotel. And it is a fun event, and it's a networking event. We've sold 90 tickets. We have a room for about 110 people. So go online to JunoMaritimeFestival.org and buy your ticket if you want to participate. And if you do go, of course, it is a fundraiser. There's some auction items. Alaska Airlines is one of our big sponsors this year, the exclusive airline sponsor for the Juno Maritime Festival. And they have 4 tickets anywhere they fly, which now includes Costa Rica, just to make it exciting. So they're expanding, and we're going to have an opportunity to bid on those tickets. And then there are lots of other amazing opportunities to buy something neat and also contribute to this community event.
I'm curious about the disconnect that you referenced right at the beginning of our conversation. Why do you think that exists? We couldn't live closer to the water.
We couldn't. You know, and how much is it? I mean, I think we ourselves, because the capital of Alaska is so important, we focus on that, as we should. But it's also important to recognize that we need to, the more diverse we are, the stronger we are. And we have a diversified economy. We have a strong and growing seafood sector. We have the visitor industry that's growing. We have a two mines that are growing. Juno is good in that sense economically. Of course, you know, you're never overconfident about the state of the state, because with oil down, that's certainly going to hurt us. But we have a fairly diversified economy. But I think it's easy to overlook the seafood industry in Juno. You know, our in the summertime, it's obvious that we're a visitor destination. I think people are sometimes surprised when they learn that Juneau is the most visited city in Alaska, and that's because we have about 1 million people this summer will come visit us on cruise ships. And, of course, that's a big employment throughout the year, but, of course, in the summertime, we see this big boost of people in our community.
What more could Juno do to emphasize our maritime environment? Your day job is head of the Juno Economic Development Council. As I've done some traveling recently, I've been to cities that are inland cities that have taken advantage of, say, a riverside. And I wonder what the JEDC board and you as the mm-hmm. executive director look at when you see Juno, a prime waterfront property. What do you think about in terms of strengthening that maritime presence?
You know, what we focus on are what we call ocean products, which are and there's a lot to that answer, and there's a lot of things that our board is interested in and that we work on. But we are particularly interested in seeing the harvest that we make from the ocean maximize the utilization of those. We see you know, both of our processes are very good. Alaska Glacier Seafoods, just because we were just recently talking with them, are making some very forward-thinking investments into utilizing fully everything that's harvested. And utilizing fully isn't easy to do, and you can do that in different ways. But the real value is to add value. You know, we've been working with a small entrepreneur that is now developing garments from salmon skins. Well, the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, and we're collaborating, is looking at new applications for seal skins, which is it's a native craft, but there's a demand out there for those products. This can be extremely high quality products. So we see the opportunities there in taking advantage of this amazing resource that we have in front of us. Mariculture is an industry that's very small in our region, yet we see potential for it to grow to a billion-dollar industry in 20 years. And we're trying to do our part to work with communities. Ketchikan has really seen that and is investing in that area. And there are opportunities within our region. We're seeing, again, Sea Alaska has made some investments, as well as Gold Belt in the region, in harvesting more of our mariculture products. So there are opportunities out there that with not only do we do a really good job of managing our ocean bounty. What we need to think harder about is how do we maximize the utilization of what comes from the ocean.
One last question. I'm curious if our maritime industry has enough trained workers from which they can draw in this region. Is that something we can supply, or is that a need?
That is definitely a need. I mean, Juneau is a community that brings in quite a few workers in the summer for both our tourism and our processing jobs. And yeah, I don't see that changing anytime quickly because what would they do the rest of the winter? I mean, so you see companies, both Taku Smokeries and Las Clash Seafoods and others, trying to find ways to even out their production further throughout the year. And they're doing great jobs. They're employing, between the two of them, hundreds of people year-round. But in the summer, there's a huge peak because that's when the fish
land. That's when the fish show up.
That's when the fish show up. That's when the tourists show up. So I don't think we're ever going to be able to change that completely. But if we can create more and more opportunities to take higher value that we can work throughout the year, that's where we're going to see a bigger return for our community.
Thank you, Brian. We've been talking with Brian Holst. He's Executive Director of the Juneau Economic Development Council, and that organization is organizing this weekend's free Maritime Festival. It will be happening Saturday from 11 to 5 at Marine Park Plaza and at the Sea Dome Dock right downtown. Lots of vendors, lots of fun, and lots to learn. Prior to that, Friday night, there is a progressive dinner amongst various restaurants in town, and you can go to maritime.org. This is the story.
I'm in Lakehurst, Jersey, with my head planted today. I just got when we're today. That's your motto, is New Jersey or bust. We'll have a hot, hot time in Lakehurst, New Jersey, with my Hindenburg plans today. And we'll all hip hip hooray when my Hindenburg lands today. The biggest bag of hydrogen that ever was flown. And when you touch that mooring mast, all records are blown. There'll be a hot, hot time in Lakehurst, New Jersey, when my Hindenburg lands today.
What jubilation!
When my Hindenburg lands today.
What celebration!
When my Hindenburg lands today.
Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. I'm your host, Lori Scandling. We have three members of the longtime Juneau Jumpers Club with us right now. We have Chloe, Martina, and Tori. Thank you for joining us. Glad that you could be here today. I know you want to promote, I couldn't believe it when you said the 30th anniversary show. Tell me a little bit about where and when.
So we're having our end of the year show this Saturday at 7 p.m. At Glacier Valley Elementary School in the main gym. So make sure to stop on by. The tickets are $5 per person or $10 for a family.
So Chloe, before we went on the air, I said, are you going to have that crazy pie auction again? Tell me a little bit about that. I've seen people pay $400 for a pie at one of those things.
Yeah, so we've kind of changed it up throughout the years. This year we're having a silent pie auction, so you can walk through and you can write down your name and how much you want to pay for a pie or some goodies, and that can get pretty crazy, so yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Chloe, what does Juneau Jumpers use the funds for that it raises?
Yeah, so the money goes to the jumpers and the team to travel to our competitions. So, like, this summer we're going to nationals. 16 of our 22 jumpers are going to nationals in Florida. And then last year we also used that money for Worlds, which was in Hong Kong, China.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So, Martina, how long have you been in Juneau Jumpers?
This is my 7th year on the team.
That's a big commitment. How often do you practice each week, and how many hours a week of practice are required?
During regular season, we have 2.5-hour practices on Tuesdays and Thursdays and 2-hour practices on Sundays. But when we start training for competition, like nationals and worlds, we start practicing like every day. And so it's a lot of time.
What drew you to Juneau Jumpers? I assume you're in high school now, so you must have developed an interest in elementary school.
Yeah, I was in Off Bay Ropers all throughout elementary school, and so I guess I just stuck with it and ended up joining the team. And
does every elementary school have a team?
Yeah, there's like Harborview Hoppers, like Gaston. Yeah, they all have teams. We have jumpers that go out and like help with the programs and stuff as well. So.
Meaning you coach the younger kids?
Yeah, just like at Auk Bay, one of our teammates, like Kaya, is always helping there. So
great. And how about you, Tori? How long have you been a jumper? Why did you get involved?
I've been on the team for 12 years. I think 12, since first grade. And I'm a senior now. But my mom is the head coach, and my sister's the assistant coach. And my sister and brother were on the team since they were little, so I've been around it like my whole life.
It's a family tradition.
Yeah.
So even though you've had all that support and opportunity within your family, describe to me what you find to be the hardest move as a Juno jumper. Because my daughter was in it for many years, and I saw some very complicated, challenging physical feats.
I would say any of the power tricks, which are basically like gymnastics tricks, those would probably be the hardest for me, just because it's like doing flips and stuff with a rope. So it's hard.
What's the typical turnout for these fundraisers? Will you sell out the gym? Should people get there early?
Yeah, I would definitely encourage people to come early and get a spot on the bleachers. We're expecting a good show, a good size show, so definitely come early.
How long will the show be? You say you have 22 jumpers. That should be quite a number of combinations of various jumps and tricks. What should people expect in terms of length of show and some of what they'll see?
Probably it'll be about an hour and a half. Maybe 2 hours with the pie auction and stuff. But we have Taffy. They're performing in our show, too. I think they have three routines.
What is Taffy?
They're a dance group.
They're kind of like us. They're, like, all ages. And they go around, state and dance.
Okay. So yeah. Taffy will join the Juno mm-hmm. Jumpers. Tori, you were talking about the tradition and practicing with your family. What do you think you get out of being a Juno jumper? And then I'll have Martina and Chloe answer as well. What benefits do you get from being a jumper? Because the physical exertion is a lot, and the demand on your time is a lot, too.
You get a family away from home because, like, everyone's so close, and you just get lifelong friends, definitely.
Okay. What do you think, Martina?
I think you just get really, really neat experiences. Like, I've gotten to travel to so many, like, cool places and meet so many people. I've been to Hong Kong. I've been to Long Beach, California, Houston. Like, we went to Cake here in Alaska and taught to a bunch of the elementary school there. And that was a really cool experience. So.
Chloe, what have you gained from your years, and how many years have you been with the jumpers?
Yeah, so I've been a Juno jumper for 11 years. This is my 11th year, and I really think it's an awesome sport because it's an individual sport. You can really focus on yourself and growing yourself and pushing yourself to the maximum of what you can do, but also it's learning to work with the team. It's learning to stay on beat with other people and to really communicate and just work really well together.
What's your favorite move, Chloe?
I really like dance moves that go into the jump, that go into the rope. You can pretty much, if you can dance it, you can pretty much put it into the jump rope, so that's pretty awesome.
Martina, got a favorite?
I really like double dutches. I don't necessarily have a favorite trick, but like routine-wise, I think double dutches are really cool. Like anything with a group, I feel like it allows you to have a lot more creativity.
And super challenging, yeah. Because you have more than one person coordinating on the rope. Yeah. Well, these shows are dynamite. I've seen them before, and I want to thank you for coming here this afternoon. And
thank you.
Letting the public know that the end-of-year show for the Juno Jumpers is at 7 p.m., Saturday evening in the Glacier Valley Gym, and the charge is $5. But, of course, you're invited to spend a lot more on one of those amazing pies. Good luck, women.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 6th of May, 2015. It's the birthday of Sigmund Freud, born in Freiburg, Moravia, now part of the Czech Republic, 1856, author of important books, The Interpretation of Dreams, Jokes and Their Relation to the Unconscious, and so forth. Freud started out as a medical doctor. He got interested in
psychology and especially in a mental illness called hysteria. And he was interested that some doctors used hypnosis to treat hysteria. He was interested that a patient could be talked out of his or her symptoms, which gave Freud the idea that the symptoms were a product of the mind and not of the body. And so he developed the idea that his patients were not conscious of all their desires and fears, that many of them were hidden in their unconscious. He believed that their unconscious mind would reveal itself in various ways, perhaps through jokes, through dreams, certainly perhaps through slips of the tongue. And what made Freud revolutionary and controversial was that he didn't simply apply this to mentally ill people, but to all human beings, even himself. Freudian methods have fallen out of favor in the scientific community. Most psychologists and psychiatrists have rejected his theories, but his ideas have entered the culture and entered the literature. The idea of the unconscious, the interpretation of dreams, the idea of repressed feelings causing harm. W. H. Auden wrote about Freud, "If often he was wrong and at times absurd to us, he is no more a person now, but a whole climate of opinion under whom we conduct our different lives." It's the birthday of the French journalist and novelist Gaston Leroux, born in Paris, 1868. He was fascinated with the Paris Opera House and wrote The Phantom of the Opera, his best-known work, in 1910. It's the birthday of the poet Randall Jarrell, born in Nashville, 1914, who said, "It is better to entertain an idea than to take it home to live with you for the rest of your life." And it's the birthday of Orson Welles, Kenosha, Wisconsin, 1915, the great actor, movie director. Orson Welles, who said, "I want to give the audience a hint of a scene, no more than that. Give them too much, and they won't contribute anything themselves. Give them just a suggestion, and you get them working with you. That's what gives the theater meaning when it becomes a social act." Here's a poem for today by Rosalind Brackenbury, entitled Morning in May. "Grass grows in the night, and early the mockingbirds begin their fleet courtships over puddles, upon wires, in the new green of the Spanish limes. Their white-striped wings flash as they flirt and dive. Wind in the chimes pulls music from the air, the skies cleared of its vast complications. In the pause before summer, the wild sprouting of absolutely everything, hair, nails, the mango's pale rose pennants, tongues of birds singing day long, words even, and sudden embraces, surprising dreams and things I'd never imagined in all these years of living, one more astonished awakening." Morning in May, a poem by Rosalind Brackenbury from her collection Bonnard's Dog, published by Hanging Loose Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well. Do good work and keep in touch.
Support comes from Alaska Canopy, now accepting applications for the 2015 summer season. More information at alaskacanopy.com.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Lori Scandling. And with me is another Lori, Lori Sika, our longtime city clerk here in the city of Juno. And she has another role as well, and that is she's associated with Litter, Inc. And that's not I-N-K, that's Incorporated, Litter Incorporated. And this is the big cleanup weekend, which has happened for many, many years, typically the first part of May. So, Lori, tell us a little bit about, first of all, what does Litter, Inc. do? Is it just an annual cleanup, or is it more than that?
Well, actually, we're Litter Free, Inc., and our goal is to clean up Juno. And so we have two main projects. One is the cleanup every year. We coordinate the annual cleanup, and that's community-wide for all the public areas that are dirty. So that includes streets and roadways, trails, beaches, parks. No private property, please.
Unless it's your own.
And then all through the summer, we run what is called a litter patrol program. And we raise money, and we turn it around, and we pay usually other nonprofits or student groups or church groups. Anybody that's looking to do a fundraiser can contact us, and we provide them with bags and safety vests, and they go out and clean up an area, and then we pay them to do the cleanups. And so they're earning money for their fundraisers, and then we also get a benefit of getting the town cleaned up.
How does Litter Free make its money as a nonprofit?
Just the generosity of our donations. So the community supports the program, and we basically, you know, pay for advertising for the cleanup and, very low overhead costs, and then we just basically any money we take in, we try to turn around and spend on cleanups. So a lot of student groups raise a lot of money that way.
So it goes right back into the community then.
Mm-hmm.
So what will be happening this Saturday?
This Saturday we'll have our annual cleanup, and we have bag sites open in the morning starting at 8 o'clock till 10. And those bag sites are at the Douglas Fire Hall, the Foodland IGA, Western Auto, Duck Creek Market, Super Bear, the UAS bookstore, the former bookstore, and out at Lynn Canal Fire Station. People can go there and they can pick up the bags, and we try to have people sign up so we can kind of keep a track of how many people are out there each year. They just choose an area of their liking that they know there's trash, and they go pick it up. They put the bags that are tied full of trash on the side of the roadway, a main roadway where our volunteer drivers will be able to see the bags. So then the drivers pick up all the bags and take it to a landfill. And at noon we have a picnic hosted by the Juno Watershed Partnership. And our friends at Lynn Canal Char, which is Cabaret Hotel and Restaurant Retailers Association, they're hosting our picnic this year. And so we hope people come from noon to 1:30 there.
And where will that be?
At the Duck Creek Market parking lot.
So it's as simple as showing up at one of a variety of locations all over the town, grabbing a bag and going to some public place, whether it's a trail, a park, a roadway.
Mm-hmm.
What is the greatest tonnage of trash that has been picked up in any year? Do you know that?
Yes. Well, it's been quite a long time. I think we're getting a lot better about not littering. But in the early 80s, there was a couple of years where we had like 40 and 50,000 pounds of trash. It's averaged in the most recent years to down to about 20,000 pounds of trash.
So it's been reduced by half.
Yeah.
And Litter Free can probably take some credit for that.
I think that, you know, a lot of it is the youth litter patrol that goes out in the summer. I think once kids get involved with picking up trash, they do not litter. You know, they don't become litterers. They don't even think about throwing something out of their car window or driving a truck full of trash through town and to the landfill without covering it. Or, you know, they develop some better habits after seeing what's out there.
So you mentioned right before we went on the air that we are approaching a century of community cleanup. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, I ran across it in the city minutes of Juneau in 1916 that the mayor declared that there should be an annual cleanup and the city should host this cleanup. And it seems like that was, you know, a frequent occurrence over the years in different sets of minutes. And I just thought, you know, shoot, we should have some kind of anniversary and celebrate that. So this year will be 99th year from that time. And I think, you know, definitely we've been doing community cleanup since Litter Free formed in the early 80s. And so I wouldn't doubt that it was a pretty consecutive event. And so I don't think we'll go down the Guinness Book of World Records, but, you know, it's worth celebrating that the town cares enough to get out and clean up one at least one day a year.
It's significant, and I think if folks have traveled in other parts of the world, the fact that the United States and various communities, but particularly our own, are so clean is something we tend to take for granted, and it really is not that way in less developed countries. Litter cleanup and a municipal system or organization for trash pickup doesn't exist or is in a very weak state. So we're very fortunate to have a community attitude about that. So the litter-free sponsored cleanup day is this Saturday, and I'm going to go through the bag sites again, Lori. Let me know if I miss one.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pick up a bag, it's as simple as that, between 8 and 10 in the morning at one of the following sites: Douglas Fire Hall,
mm-hmm.
Foodland IGA, Super Bear, UAS Bookstore, Western Auto, Duck Creek, and Lynn Canal Fire Hall. Did I miss one?
Nope.
Very good.
Doing
and
good.
Then head on out to a public area, perhaps an area that you frequent for picnics or hiking or walking your dog, and shove those bags full, set them on the roadway so that they're visible, and join the fun at noon for a free picnic sponsored by the Cabaret and Hotel Association from noon to 1:30 at Duck Creek. So that
and our friends at Juneau Watershed Partnership.
And thank you to them as well. Thank you, Lori, for joining us and for being on the board of Litter Free, Inc. and helping to keep Juneau as sparkling as it is. We appreciate
sure.
it.
Thanks.
Shop in my neighborhood. The boss's old man, Rosenberg, sold him everything that wasn't nailed down. From my apartment, south side of town. Spending money and the clothes on my back. I close my eyes, put my finger on the map. Then head in that direction without ever looking back. Like a magic vanishing act. Don't wanna hear another conversation. People who know nothing and got nothing to say. I'm gonna take myself a long vacation and make it clean. Nothing to see.
Clean Getaway. I want to thank Jeff Brown for programming always the most appropriate music. He's very, very clever, very creative. I'm Lori Scandling, and welcome back to Juno Afternoon. With me is Kelly Manning. She is the director of the Canvas, which is a great site to do art as a community, as an individual, as a family. And the Canvas is part of REACH. And REACH is an acronym, isn't it, Kelly?
You know, it was originally, but they've gotten away just from using the acronym just because the language is dated. So now it's just REACH Incorporated.
Tell us what REACH does.
Yeah, REACH provides services for people who experience developmental and intellectual disabilities. And REACH has been providing those services in Juneau for over 40 years. And so we have a wide range of services in that within that. So we, you know, our biggest areas of services are supporting individuals to be independent in the community. So we have a couple of different departments that that take on different roles with that. But essentially, the goal is to help people to live full lives and be engaged in their community. People who experience disabilities, to help them to break down barriers. So we do programming for employment, helping people learn job skills, work in the community, you know, have support as they build those skills. We do. We have a what we call our community living department that provides supports for people that need support throughout the day, throughout the whole day, and help them to be engaged in their community. So take them to do activities, take them shopping, help them with their daily living skills at home, those kinds of things, really providing that support. We have youth and children services, so we help youth that are in the school district after school and outside of school hours, providing supports for those individuals in a wide range of areas. We have an infant learning program, so we provide infant learning supports for children until the age of 3. And so really, REACH does services across the full spectrum of individuals' lives from infancy to end of life and everything in between, helping people to be a part of recreation in the community, helping people to get to health care needs as they get older. So really wide range of services for individuals with those disabilities and the need for that support.
How many individuals does REACH currently serve?
We serve over 350 individuals, wide range, and that's mostly in Juneau, but we also do some services throughout Southeast Alaska. So some of the smaller communities, Haines, Skagway, Petersburg, Wrangell, a couple of places where we have like maybe one or two families that we support. But throughout Southeast Alaska, we do some employment supports in Sitka. So most of that's in Juneau, but we do have some supports outside of Juneau as well.
And are the services free, or is there a charge for the support services that are offered?
Most of the services that we provide, the resources come through Medicaid. So individuals can come to REACH, and we've got resources to help people determine whether or not they can meet Medicaid eligibility. And so if you know someone or you have a family member that experiences disabilities and you just want to know what kind of resources are available, you can come to REACH and we can help you to figure that out. And for those individuals that are eligible for Medicaid services, then we can help them with that process. And we have staff that can do that. And then there are some folks that we serve that don't necessarily meet Medicaid requirements. And we work with different grant programs and different things to help with people that just need a little bit of support, but they're not really eligible for Medicaid. So there are some supports that we do that are outside of that. But the bulk of our services are services that are provided under the Medicaid waiver program.
So it sounds like concern about cost should never be a barrier to an individual or a family who might be seeking such support.
Right, right. And we, you know, anytime that we can help people find resources, whether they're with REACH or another agency that really fits their needs, we help people in finding the resources that meet their needs. So we definitely recommend people, if they just want to know about what the services are and whether or not they're eligible or what's available to them, we have the resources to help them with that.
So, why don't you tell me the phone number and the web address and the physical address of REACH headquarters as a starting place for folks?
Yeah, absolutely. REACH is located at 213 3rd Street, right downtown, and we also have a website at reachak.org, and people can call the front office 586-8228 if they have questions about services, and we can help them get them directed to the right person.
Your job is director of the Canvas. Tell us how that integrates as part of REACH and some of the work that you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Personally, I love being involved with the Canvas. I think that as a program of REACH, one of the great opportunities that Canvas provides is it's a really visible place where you see the integration happening that is happening in a lot of areas in the community. And so it's, I think, really representative of the services that we provide at REACH in general. Obviously, our focus at the Canvas is art, and that being a personal passion for me, it's a good fit. So at the Canvas, what our goal is to really take a community art studio and create that integration. So we want to make sure that people of any ability level find access there. So we really do support individuals that are new to art and don't really have a lot of art experience, to people who are experienced artists can come and use the Canvas as a place where they can share their experience. We have studio time for certain mediums and things like that. So we have everything from instruction for people that are new to art to opportunities for experienced artists to be engaged in the community as an artist. And so in that way, we really are engaging everyone across the spectrum of ability level. And through that, are really able to create that integration for the individuals who experience disabilities who are everywhere along that spectrum themselves. We have individuals who experience disabilities that come in and are new, and we get them engaged and learning about art. And we have individuals who have been a part of REACH and a part of the arts community for their lifetime. And so they're experienced, and we have them teach art at community activities. We've had individuals teach groups of Big Brothers, Big Sisters. So individuals who experience disabilities teaching what they know and sharing their arts knowledge with different groups. So in the same way that any other community artist engages at across that spectrum of ability, so do our students with disabilities. And so that's one of the ways that I think the Canvas is really indicative of the kind of programming that REACH is providing, really helping people to find where they fit in the community and then helping them to engage and be a part of that and break down some of the maybe social barriers that are difficult for them to get beyond on their own.
Sounds like the two key words are inclusion and engagement all the way along the spectrum for REACH services.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the Canvas is also at the corner of Seward and 3rd. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. So our street address is 223 Seward Street, but we're, yeah, on that corner. And really, if you look at the building, the REACH entrance is basically just upstairs. And so we're kind of, if you come to the Canvas and you know where the Canvas is, you just go around the corner and there's the entrance to the REACH building.
What are the hours of the Canvas, and can people drop by then at any time?
Yeah, absolutely. The Canvas is open 10 to 7, Monday through Friday. Typically on Fridays we close it a little bit earlier, but first Fridays we're open till 7 or 8. And yeah, people can drop by and come in and find out more about the Canvas. And if they're interested in REACH but they know where the Canvas is but they're not sure about REACH, they can come to the Canvas as well, and we always help people find the right place to be.
One-stop shop.
Exactly.
So tell us a little bit about the fundraiser, which will take the form of loads of pasta here pretty soon.
Yes, yeah. So REACH is doing a spaghetti dinner fundraiser, and this opportunity is coming up on Saturday, May 23rd. Really fun, family-friendly is the idea, and my mom, as an Italian cook, and we'll be working with a local cook to prepare the spaghetti dinner, and she's wonderful, makes the best spaghetti in my opinion. And so we're going to be having a spaghetti dinner with meatballs and salad and bread, and with that we're going to have a dessert auction. We've got a couple of local dessert bakers and restaurants, Pie in the Sky, The Rookery, are some that we've that are already committed, and we're going to be approaching some others for a dessert auction, silent auction at that dinner. So it should be a lot of fun, good opportunity to meet some of the people that we serve and support the REACH's mission of creating inclusion and engagement.
What time and where?
So it is from 5 to 7:30 at the Moose Lodge, which is out on Airport Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And tickets are $10, and you can get them at the Canvas. Or if you know somebody that works at REACH, you can reach out and see. But we will be selling them through the Canvas as well, so that's a good place to get
them.
And
at the door?
And at the door as well, yeah.
So
absolutely.
If you're hungry and you're desiring some specially made pasta on Saturday the 23rd, you can go to the Moose Family Center there on Airport Boulevard.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Kelly. I've been talking with Kelly Manning. She is the director of the Canvas, which is part of the spectrum of REACH services provided to individuals who experience challenges and disabilities in our community, talking about a fundraiser on May 23rd. That's a Saturday, a spaghetti dinner and a dessert auction from 5 to 7:30 at the Moose Family Center, and tickets are $10. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This is Bird Note. There's the big, flashy, red-crested, pileated woodpecker. And the noisy northern flicker, the one that pounds on metal gutters. Today, I'd like you to meet a quiet, diminutive woodpecker, the downy woodpecker. The smallest woodpecker in North America, the downy measures in at 3 inches shorter than a robin. You might not even notice it as it pecks for insects on trunks and branches of trees. But if you do, you'll see a black and white bird with bold stripes on its head. The male is easily distinguished from the female by the crimson-red splash at the back of its head. It's rare to see this, but as part of their spring courtship, downy woodpeckers perform a spectacular display called the butterfly flight. The male and female seem to dance among the trees, holding their wings high and flapping slowly and lazily like butterflies. More likely, you'll hear the drumming of the downy. Woodpeckers remind us to value what some think of as dead trees. They're alive with nourishment. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
We're listening to Wind Sync with Victor Asuncion, part of the Juno Jazz and Classic Festivals, which runs 3 weekends this month. This evening at 7 p.m., you can hear Victor Asuncion and Evan Drachman in recital at the Hangar Ballroom. On Sunday at 3 p.m., there is a Mother's Day concert with Wind Sync at the UAS Egan Library, and at 6:30 p.m. in the same location is Putting on the Ritz, a classical and jazz set with hors d'oeuvres and a no-host bar featuring Winsink, Paul Rosenthal, Evan Drachman, and the Bria Schoenberg Quintet. On Monday at the Goldtown Nickelodeon at 6 p.m., Winsink will be performing with music and a movie. And again on Tuesday, 7 to 9 p.m., at the UAS Egan Classroom Wing, Winsink will be conducting a workshop for wind instruments. And 7 p.m. next Thursday, May 14th, at Chapel by the Lake, you can hear Victor Asuncion of Winsink with Paul Rosenthal performing. You've been listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Lori Scandling, with our program manager and creative all-round engineer, Jeff Brown, on the board today. Tomorrow on Juno Afternoon, Shona Osterhout hosts. Beth Weigel will be here to highlight activities at the library. We'll talk to Elfrieda Nord about this Saturday's Garden Club plant sale. Paul Rosenthal will be here to highlight his performances at this year's Juno Jazz and Classic Festival. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. Of course, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more. That's a Juno afternoon. Taking a quick look at the weather, partly cloudy tomorrow morning, but becoming sunny for another day, highs in the high 50s. By tomorrow night, though, there will be increasing clouds with a slight chance of rain. By Friday, that turns to mostly cloudy with a chance of rain, and rain likely by Friday night. Thanks for joining us on a Juno afternoon.
One weekend only. Don't miss an evening of magical tree fun for the whole family. Walt Disney's Broadway production of Mary Poppins. This is a Super Cali musical brought to you by all Juno high schools at the JDHS Auditorium. May 7th, 8th, and 9th at 7 p.m. and May 10th at 2 p.m. Step in time to purchase your tickets at Hofside Books or jahc.org.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno,